The following preview is of a graphic audio production rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Cadet Vada.
Sir.
You are a disgrace to the service.
Sir?
Many, many people want your head on a pike. I'm going to see your resignation on my desk by 1500 hours this afternoon.
I, Kailara Evangeline Dominique Vada, hereby resign from the Academy for personal reasons.
Now we have to figure out what to do with
you. Dad, listen.
We're sending you out to the Rift with a ship going to salvage. You're taking the Glennis Jones to Lastway.
You're making me captain?
Courage, Kai. You've got what you need to start a good life. Go.
What if I can make enough in trade to buy Glennis and fix her up and own my own ship?
I need to talk to you.
What's up?
We have a contract to deliver a cargo of agricultural machinery to Belinta. What?
Kai. We wondered how long it'd take.
Trade and profit, right? Well, let's take a look at this contract you signed. We have to buy the goods up front?
Of course. I thought Sabine Prime. Sabine has several manufacturers of the kind of equipment they want.
But it's worth trying.
Mandatory repairs. We have to replace that sealed unit.
Secundus has threatened to blockade Prime.
Prime and Secundus are moving towards war this time.
Sabine's system is now cut off from regular communication with the rest of the universe.
We have a problem. Warships. Get us away from the station, Riel.
Glennis Jones, acknowledge.
Captain Vada, Glennis Jones.
Glennis Jones, this is the Mackenzie Military Assistance Corporation ship Victor. You will proceed alone down the escape passage to the lock. You will operate the lock for our boarding personnel. You will obey the orders of their commanding officer. If you disobey, your ship is toast. Got that?
You're Captain Vada?
Yes.
Start back up the passage. Tell him to sit down on the deck, hands on knees.
Where's Skeldon?
He was here a second ago.
Skeldon!
Pit to Victor. Send me a medic. Live, damn it.
From Elizabeth Moon, creator of the Serrano Legacy, a compelling new sci-fi series, Vata's War. Book 1, Trading in Danger, Part 1, in Graphic Audio.
And now, for our feature presentation. Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Elmer Kelton's Texas Rangers series. Performed by Terrence Aselford, David Coyne, Eric Messner, Thomas Penny, Andy Clements, Richard Rowan, Michael John Casey, Tim Carlin, Ken Jackson, Joe Brack, Jonathan Watkins, Tony Nam, Tim Getman, Scott McCormick, Catherine Aselford, James Konacek, Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, Nanette Savard, Johan Detweiler, Casey Platt, Michael Glenn, Christopher Graybill, Drew Kopas, Mort Shelby, and Bobby Aselford. Texas Rangers number 2, Badger Boy. The Texas Frontier, Spring 1865.
Hey, Rusty, see that?
The smoke?
Yeah. You think...
Hope not.
but we're probably too late. Come on.
Yeah. Rusty Shannon was tall and rangy. He was a private like the rest, but they had fallen into the habit of looking to him for leadership. Nor was he noticeably older than the others. Orphaned early, he could only guess he was about 25, give or take a little. He considered himself a soldier of sorts, though he owned no uniform. Texas had not even provided him a badge as a symbol of Ranger authority, much less given him his fair pay. The tired Confederacy, struggling to its feet for one more battle and one more loss, left little behind for wages, especially for those men in homespun cloth and buckskin riding far from any town. To Rusty's independent, red-haired manner of thinking, it was high time the Richmond government conceded defeat and let the guns fall silent. Even from his faraway vantage point at the edge of Comanche Kiowa country, he saw clearly, and with pain, that the war had bled both sides much too long. The Texas frontier had a war of its own to contend with, and it was far from over.
Whoa!
Now he saw a half-burned cabin. A man and two boys carrying water in buckets from a nearby creek and throwing it on the smoking walls. He remembered the place. It belonged to a farmer named Haynes. A chill went through Rusty as he saw two blanket-covered forms on the ground.
Minutemen, ain't ya?
Ranger was not an official term. The public often referred to the Rangers as Minutemen, among other things.
Yes, sir, Mr. Haynes.
How come you always show up when it's too late?
We'll bury you dead. Then I'll send a couple of men to escort you and your boys to Fort Belknap.
We got nobody at Belknap. Everybody we have is here. And here we're staying.
You've got no roof over your head.
We saved part of the cabin. We can rebuild it. You just stay on the trail of them red devils.
I see your two boys are working hard to save the cabin. What about your woman folk?
They're under the sheets. My wife. Other one is her little girl. The Comanches butchered them like there was cattle. Scalped them while they were still breathing.
How come they didn't get the rest of you?
Me and my sons was working in the field. The heathens came upon the cabin so quick they was probably in sight before Anna'll even saw him. I hit one of them with my first shot and they drawed away. All we could do for Anna'll and the baby was to drag them outside before they burned.
Rusty was undecided whether settlers like Haynes, who remained on the exposed western frontier, were brave or merely foolhardy. Either way, he would concede that they were tenacious.
Conscript officers decided to pass me by on account of my age and my family. I wish she'd taken me. My family would have moved back to East Texas and been safe. Hey, you're a fit-looking specimen. Why ain't you in the Confederate Army?
I figured I was needed more in the ranging service. They don't conscript those servants in frontier companies.
Well, I imagine they'll start. Richmond's running low on men. Sorry I jumped all over you. I know it's not your doing that there ain't enough Rangers. It's the Richmond government's fault, taking off so many men to fight a stupid war 1,000 miles away, and the Texas government for letting them get away with it. Damn them all. And double damn Jeff Davis.
There had been a time when such words could put a man in mortal danger from rope-wielding zealots determined to rid Texas of dissidents. Rusty had helped cut down the bodies of his friend Lon Monahan and Lon's son Billy from the limb of a tree in the wake of the hangman. Now and then, in the dark of night, the memory brought him awake, clammy with cold sweat and fighting his blanket. He had long harbored the same opinions as Haynes, but spoke them aloud only to friends he could trust. He had witnessed too much grief brought on by night-riding vigilantes like Colonel Caleb Dawkins, who did not go to war themselves, yet demanded that others do so or die.
There were 18 Indians. I don't see but six of you.
We're lucky we've got six. If we come across a minister, we'll send him. You'll want proper services for your folks.
Much obliged. But I can read the Bible same as any preacher.
The older of the two boys appeared to be around 12. The other, perhaps 10. Rusty felt sorrow for them. They would have to finish growing up without their mother. But at least they still had their father. Unlike Rusty, they had not lost all their family. Surely the war back east would sputter out before they were old enough to become soldiers. The war here was another matter. He could see no end to it.
I'm fearful for August Faust, my neighbor. I hope him and his family saw the smoke and fought it up. He's off to the southwest.
Which is where the Indians' trail leads. We'll go see, Haines. Let's go!
The nearby Indians were well aware that the white men of the north had been at war with the white men of the south for most of 4 years. They did not understand the reasons or care. What mattered to them was that the heavy fighting had left the frontier vulnerable. By order of Texas's Confederate government in Austin, the Rangers were duty-bound to locate and take into custody any deserters or conscription dodgers who might be idling out the war in the wild country beyond the settlements. Rusty figured that if the Confederacy wanted them captured, they should send Confederate Army troops to do the job. Protecting the settlers left vulnerable seemed much more important. And right now, it seemed like his men had some protecting to do. Someone was still fighting at the Faust place. When the picket cabin came into full view, Rusty rough-counted 11 Indians. Most were afoot and taking cover wherever they could find it. It stood to reason that a few others were behind the cabin, out of his sight. 50 or 60 yards away, two warriors held a number of horses. It was not normally Comanche or Kiowa custom to make a frontal assault on a well-defended position. They preferred to catch their quarry by surprise with a quick, clean strike, pulling back if resistance proved stronger than expected. Evidently, that had been the case here. The raiders had the cabin surrounded, but they were a long way from taking it. Len Tanner rode up beside Rusty. The befreckled young ranger would willingly go hungry for 3 days to get into a good fight. He had, several times.
They only got us outnumbered by 3-1. We ought to crack this nut pretty easy.
Then let's be at him.
The Rangers were 200 yards from the cabin when the Indians discovered them, ran for their mounts.
You better run, you yellow-bellied Indians!
Hey! Go get them!
Everybody all right?
Is nobody killed? Get my work horses back if you can!
You heard him. Let's go!
Horses and mules were almost as important as life, but without them, a farmer had no way to plow his fields, no way to travel except to walk. The war had pulled most horses out of this region, except wild bands ranging free beyond the settlements. Few farmers were equipped to catch those, much less break and train them. And should they manage to do so, chances were that either the Indians would steal them, or a government horse-buying team would come along and take them away. It would leave Confederate scrip, or worthless promissory notes, which Rusty regarded as legalized theft.
They're cutting towards the creek! The timber will slow them down! Let's stay in the open and keep up with them!
Look back, Rusty!
Two raiders had broken out behind the Rangers and were racing toward the cabin.
Whoa!
Startled, Rusty reined the black horse around. His first thought was that they intended another try at Faust or one of the other settlers who had come out of the cabin and gathered in the yard. He spurred in pursuit, intending to keep the warriors too busy. The pair slowed their mounts and leaned down, grabbing the fallen man by the arms and lifting him up between them. Men in the yard fired a couple of futile shots. It was a point of honor among Plains warriors not to ride away from the battlefield and leave a wounded or dead comrade behind to be killed or mutilated, if rescue was at all possible. By white men's standards, the Comanches were savages. Though Rusty deplored their propensity for random killing, he respected their bravery. He wondered if he could muster the courage to do the same thing.
They're no threat. Come on, girl. Let's get back to our party. Yeah!
Rusty ran back to join his Rangers and found them rather quickly. They had stopped.
What's going on?
They split up into little bunches. Too much risk of an ambush.
Rusty looked back over his shoulder and saw three warriors on open ground north of the creek racing away. They had concealed themselves in the timber until the pursuit had passed.
There's still a few left, though. There ain't all that many of them. Let's say we show them who's the boss.
The odds are too long. We bloodied them and spoiled their party. Won't do them any harm to leave them something they can brag about when they get home.
Home might be the broad and mysterious high plains of Texas, the land known as Comancheria, where the wild bands still roamed free. Or it might be a reservation set aside north of the Red River shortly before the war began between the states. It was under federal jurisdiction, which meant that any Texan who strayed upon it and managed not to be killed by hostile Indians was subject to arrest as a Confederate belligerent, unless he could convince the authorities that he was trying to escape Confederate service. In that case, they were likely to impress him into the Union Army. Rusty saw no net gain in that. Though he didn't want to fire upon the United States flag, he would not like to fire upon fellow Texans either. He wished the only thing he ever had to shoot at was meat for the table. Some men with more courage than scruples periodically invaded the reservation to steal Indian horses. That fanned Indian anger at all Texans and made them more eager than ever to raid south of the Red River. Some of these horse thieves were brushmen, fugitives from Confederate conscription. They used aversion to the war as an excuse, but many would have been outlaws whether there'd been a war or not. It was in their nature. They seemed indifferent to the misery their forays brought upon fellow citizens. Rusty's horse stood relaxed in the camp corral, enjoying the brushing his owner gave his black hide. Rusty stood upwind so the breeze could not carry dust and loose hair into his face. Both horse and rider had been granted a rest after days out on patrol. Rusty examined Alamo for signs of scalds or saddle sores, a hazard when a horse was used long and hard. Out here, a man took care of his mount before he took care of his own needs. Everything was too far away for walking. Len Tanner paused in brushing his own horse and gazed to the east. He pointed with the brush.
You don't reckon that'd be a paymaster coming yonder?
I think the paymaster's office has lost the map to this place.
Rusty walked to the rail fence for a better look. He wondered if the rider would make it all the way into camp before his mount collapsed of fatigue. The animal was thin. The state provided little money to pay for grain, so horses had to subsist on whatever grass they could find. Only recently had showers begun to fall after 2 years of drought across most of Texas. Half of the company had deserted during the winter and early spring. Rusty could not blame the men for saddling their horses in the dark of night and stealing away. They had not been paid in months. Confederate scrip found little favor among the merchants of nearby Fort Belknap town anyway. Even those few who still boasted about their continuing enthusiasm for the Southern cause. The last time Rusty had been sent away to buy horses for the outfit, he'd felt like a thief. The rangers had authority to take the horses with or without the owner's consent, paying with promissory notes on the state government. The paper was worth more than the promise. People could save it and write letters on the back.
Maybe we ought to go see what's happening.
Captain Whitfield will call if he needs us.
On patrol, Rusty was nominally in charge. Anything and everything was his business. In camp, Captain Whitfield was in command, and nothing was Rusty's business unless the captain saw fit to make it so. Whitfield was a large man who carried a Navy Colt on his hip, a bottle of whiskey, and a Bible in his saddlebag. He was accomplished in the use of all three. The new arrival's clothes were as ragged as those of the Fort Belknap Rangers. Rusty thought he recognized him as a ranger from another company.
Oh, he don't look like no paymaster. A paymaster would steal at least enough to buy him a decent suit of clothes. What the... It's too early for supper.
No, that's Whitfield. That's his call that he needs us. Let's go, Len.
Aww.
As they entered the mess tent, they saw Captain Whitfield standing before the rest of the men, all casually waiting for him to speak. Whitfield was middle-aged and broad of hip. He would probably run to belly if ranger rations were not perpetually meager and duty hours long. As it was, he probably wouldn't render out 2 pounds of fat. He tugged at a bushy, unkempt mustache while he watched 7 men amble up in no particular hurry and cluster around him. 2 squatted on their heels. Army officers had admonished Whitfield several times about his company's lack of military order, but he paid no more attention to them than to the buzzing of flies around the corrals. He considered it absurd to require the men to stand in a straight line or at attention. All that mattered was that they listened to him, whether he was giving orders or reading to them from the book. Whitfield had formerly been a sergeant and had taken over the company soon after the outbreak of war. He had inherited the captaincy when the former commanding officer, August Burmeister, had ridden north to join the Union Army. Rusty had never heard Whitfield express favor for either side of the conflict. He suspected that, like himself, Whitfield had chosen frontier service rather than take up arms against the Union. The compromise gave ease to a conscience torn between 2 loyalties.
Boys, I've been brought some bad news.
We've lost the war?
Not yet. Though it looks like the end is upon us, praise the Lord. Reason I've called you together is to tell you the conscription officers are on their way again. I know, the war's taking a bad turn, so they're grabbing everybody they can get. Frontier Service won't keep them from taking you now if you're halfways young and not too crippled to walk or ride a horse. I know some of you never did have strong feelings in favor of the Richmond government.
So what do you want us to do?
The position I'm in, I can't be giving you advice. Anybody wants to leave before the conscript officers get here, I ain't stopping them. Just don't take any horse that don't belong to you. That's all. I'll be in my tent.
Rusty walked to Whitfield's tent.
Captain?
Shannon, have a drink?
No, thank you, Captain. I want to keep my mind clear.
Mine is too damn clear already. I don't understand what Richmond is thinking of. There's women and children dying out here because they ain't left enough fighting men to protect them. Now they want to take even more for a war they're fixing to lose anyway.
Those people back in Richmond never saw a Comanche. They don't realize the problem.
The book tells about times of tribulation. Lord help us, we're damn sure living in one now.
Captain, I need to tell
you... Don't tell me a thing. What I don't know, I can't answer for. Just do whatever you feel is right and don't allow anybody else to sway your judgment.
If the conscription officers find most of the company gone, they're liable to bear down hard on you.
What can they do? I'm too old to be sent to the army. They can't find me because I'm as broke as the rest of you. I doubt they'd shoot me. So what's left except to send me home? I'm ready to shuck it all and go back to the farm anyhow.
You've been a good officer. I'm proud I got to serve with you.
Get you some grub out of the mess tent. You can't travel far hungry.
Just a little salt, a little flour. I can probably scare up enough game to keep me in meat.
Wish I could trade you out of that good black horse, but you'll need him worse than I do. Good luck to you.
Rusty built a small fire in the bottom of a dry buffalo wallow, hoping it could not be seen from a distance. He didn't need it for warmth, but only for broiling a slice of hindquarter from an antelope his rifle had brought down. He made a poor sort of bread dough by mixing a bit of flour with water and a pinch of salt, then curling it around a stick to hold over the coals. While he waited for his simple supper, the full weight of his situation settled upon him like a heavy shroud. He'd not felt so achingly alone since he had buried Daddy Mike beside Mother Dora and turned his back on the Colorado River farm where he had spent his growing up years. The Ranger Company had been a family of sorts, though its members came and went. Almost the only constants had been Len Tanner and Captain Whitfield, and he had left them both with barely a goodbye. His thoughts drifted to another family far away and to the wisp of a girl named Geneva Monahan. Someday, if peace was ever allowed to settle over the land, he intended to marry her. Then once again, he would have a family of his own. From here and for now, that seemed a long time off. While he waited for his meager meal to cook, he looked up at the stars and thought of so much forever lost to him. His mind ran back over the long years to Daddy Mike and Mother Dora Shannon, the couple who had taken him in, a lost child orphaned by Indians, and raised him as their own. He remembered a pleasant boyhood on the Colorado River farm, so far from here in both time and distance. It still belonged to him by inheritance, although it had been a long while since he was given leave to visit there. He thought of Geneva Monahan, who had moved to that farm with what remained of a war-torn family, seeking refuge from the dangers of their own place nearer the frontier. It had been the better part of a year since he had last received a letter, and much longer since he had seen her. He pondered his risk in traveling there to visit her and to look again at the farm the Shannons had bequeathed to him. Finally, he thought about the years he had patrolled the frontier. He thought of the comradeship, the shared perils and disappointments, and occasional small victories. That it had come to an abrupt and unexpected end left in him a sense of emptiness, of work left hanging, incomplete. He had had no time to formulate plans. The most urgent consideration had been to remove himself from the conscription officer's reach. Where to go from here was the major question. faced several alternatives, none of them to his liking. The sight of distant firelight stopped him cold. He thought first it might be a lantern in some settler's window, but he dismissed that idea. The only cabins he had seen since leaving the ranger camp had been abandoned, their owners electing to move away from the Indian danger. No, this was a campfire. Two possibilities came to mind: brushmen or Indians. The brushmen, a combination of outlaws and fugitives from military service, tended to congregate in out-of-the-way places and in numbers that kept them relatively secure against attack by either Indians or civil authorities. Rusty stared at the distant fire and considered his options. The law be damned, he had never felt any moral obligation to pursue conscription dodgers for the benefit of the Confederacy. Now that he was no longer part of the company, brushmen were none of his business. Indians were another matter. This far south of the Red, an Indian campfire almost certainly meant trouble brewing for someone. His safest course would be to saddle up now and be far away by daylight. He told himself this was none of his business either. He no longer had any ranger obligations, no oath to live up to. If the Indians moved toward the settlements, someone else would probably find their trail. Only by purest chance had he seen this fire in the first place. Had he not been obliged to leave camp, he wouldn't have traveled this far west. If he rode away now, no one would be the worse off than if he'd never been here.
Damn.
He removed his meal from the fire and quickly kicked it out. They could be Indians, and they were close to the ranger camp. Eating would have to wait.
All right, let's go, boy. Quietly now.
He kept slow to lessen the sound of his hooves and to avoid stumbling into deadfall timber that might make a noise. Soon he was as near the fire as he dared ride. He moved on afoot. He smelled the smoke and meat roasting over glowing coals. He saw figures moving about. His skin prickled. These were Indians, right enough. He counted at least eight and reasoned that others were beyond the firelight. He drew away from the camp and returned to his horse. His skin still tingled with excitement.
Old feller, we wouldn't want to run into those boys in the daylight.
Yeah. Prudence told him to head south, but he hesitated. The honorable thing, the responsible thing, would be to double back to the ranger camp and sound an alarm. But he would be riding into the clutches of the conscription officers. It was a foregone conclusion that they would want him for the Southern Army. But Rusty thought of the Haynes woman and the little girl. Other settlers would likely fall victim should these raiders not be turned back. Innocent blood would stain his hands if he rode away, taking care only of himself. Even before he decided at a conscious level, he turned Alamo eastward, going back the way he had come. Rusty judged that it was near noon when the Fort Belknap settlement loomed up ahead. All along, he had hoped he might encounter a friend and impart his information, then slip away without actually entering camp. Unfortunately, he saw no rangers or anyone else he knew well enough to trust. Some residents of the settlement had no liking for the rangers, who interfered with their chosen work of stealing reservation horses and running liquor to the same Indians they stole from. He would have to take his chances. Len Tanner's legs always looked too long for the rest of him. Ambling out of the open corral, leading his horse, he spotted Rusty.
Rusty? Rusty! I thought you got clean away.
Yeah. The conscript officers here already?
Two of them fixing to take most of the company away. Me included. What in the hell did you come back for?
I ran into Comanches. The captain needs to know.
Well, he won't have enough men left to do much about it. They're just waiting for the last patrol to report in so they can pick over the rest of the outfit.
Stripping the frontier companies. I don't know how they expect the settlers out here to hang on against the Indians.
That's government for you. Talk big about how much they care, then go off and leave you to fight the wolves by yourself. Tell me what you want the captain to know, then hightail it out of here before they see you.
Captain Whitfield stepped from his tent, a well-fed middle-aged stranger beside him. The stranger wore a Confederate uniform, nicely tailored, though begrimed from travel.
Too late. That'd be one of the conscriptors, I suppose.
Two steps behind that officer came another man wearing a badly weathered Confederate coat with sergeant stripes. The left leg of his civilian trousers was folded, and a wooden leg strapped into place at the knee. Tanner looked as if he'd contracted colic.
Head man walking with the captain calls himself Lieutenant Billings. Acts like he owns the world. Sergeant's name is Forrest. Been to the war and got his leg shot off.
Despite the wooden leg, Forrest's back was straight and unyielding, as if he'd been a soldier all his life. Rusty summed up his defenses, for stern military types always made him ill at ease. Like Captain Whitfield, he had never understood or seen good reason for strict military discipline. He feared he was going to dislike the sergeant.
Back from patrol a little early, aren't you?
I came across a Comanche war party last night. They camped better than half a day's ride west of here.
How many?
I counted 8, but it was dark. I'm guessing 12 or 15.
This is what I've been trying to tell you, Lieutenant. If you take most of my men, I won't have enough to face a small war party, much less a real invasion.
I have my orders, Whitfield. The army doesn't ask for opinions. It says jump, and it's our duty to ask how high.
I'd like to put that Richmond bunch out here on the picket line and let them fight off Indians for a while. They'd see for themselves that Yankees aren't the worst thing we've got to worry about.
The recruiting officer stared at Rusty, his eyes probing so hard that Rusty felt the man was reading his mind.
You said you saw the Indians more than half a day's ride from here. Isn't that a long way to be scouting by yourself?
We're short-handed.
Yes, better one man than no men at all. And that's what it's getting down to.
How do we know these are hostile Indians?
Well, Sergeant Forrest, since they were removed from the Texas reservations, any Indians found inside the state's boundaries are considered hostile.
They might just be hunting buffalo.
This time of year, they'd go out onto the plains. They wouldn't come down this way to hunt. Not for buffalo, anyway. It's more
when
likely...
When did you say that last patrol is due in?
Should have been here already.
We want to start back toward Austin as soon as possible.
Can't you wait till we see about those Indians?
War does not await the convenience of anyone. We have no time for running after a bunch of bow and arrow savages.
You would if they raided your place and killed some of your family.
What's your name, Ranger?
David Shannon. Folks that know me call me Rusty.
Well, David Shannon, I don't for a minute believe you were scouting out there by yourself. I believe you were running away to avoid conscription.
Well, you can believe me or not. Don't much matter to me. But Captain Whitfield knows. He's the only man I report to.
You'll be reporting to me as soon as we start back to Austin. Don't you forget that. Now, Captain, I would like to take another look at your records while stationed out here.
Lieutenant Billings and a reluctant Whitfield started back toward the headquarters tent. Sergeant Forrest stayed behind.
We're a long way from Austin and farther yet from Richmond, Billings. A day or two oughtn't to make much difference.
Need I remind you, Sergeant, that I am in charge here?
I never forget that, sir. I was just thinking...
You are not here to think, Sergeant. You are here to obey orders.
I don't question your authority. I just meant to remind you that...
Yes, well, I am quite aware of our location, Sergeant.
Now, David, Rusty.
Yes, Sergeant?
Are you sure you could take us back where you saw the Indians?
I could, but they wouldn't be there anymore. I figured they're heading off yonder to the southeast, where the settlements are thicker.
If we angled across, shouldn't we run into them, or at least come upon their tracks?
You're forgetting the lieutenant's orders.
I never forget orders, but sometimes I ignore them when I see a good reason.
You don't seem to have much fear for authority.
Family connections won the lieutenant his commission. I got these stripes on the battlefield, and this wooden leg besides. After all that, there's damn little that son of a bitch can do to scare me.
Rusty decided he was going to like the sergeant after all. The last patrol arrived about noon, bringing the company's strength to 11 men. Captain Whitfield walked among the new arrivals.
Get yourself some dinner as quick as you can, then saddle fresh horses. We're going after Indians.
The hell you are! I'm taking these men to Austin.
Whitfield spread his feet apart in a stance that said he would not be moved. Rusty noted that Billings' hand had dropped to the butt of his pistol.
This is my camp, Lieutenant, and you are a long way from home.
What? This Captain Forrest, put this man under arrest.
Afraid not, Lieutenant. Captain makes good sense. I'd advise you to listen to him.
That's it. You've laid a hand on a superior officer, Shannon.
I've done more than that. I've disarmed him before he makes a stupid mistake.
Forrest, you're behind this, I know it. I'll have you court-martialed for this.
Do it and be damned. I never intended to make a career out of the army anyway. Tell them anything you want. Tell them I got drunk and dallied with lewd women, if that's your pleasure. It'd sure be mine.
I won't forget this. I could have every one of you shot.
You're a long way from Austin. If you want to get there, you better talk less and listen more. Shannon, the lieutenant's pistol, if you don't mind. I know you've never had to face the Yankees, Billings. You ever been in an Indian fight?
No, I have been denied both pleasures.
Well, I've done both, and there's damn little pleasure in either one. You can go with us or stay in camp, whichever suits you best.
I'll go, if only to keep some Indian from killing you before I can have you properly shot.
That's fair. Here you are, Lieutenant.
Now, this is no time to fight amongst ourselves. If we can turn back a raid, we'll save some settler families a lot of grief. That ought to count for something, Lieutenant.
Yes, we'll see how it counts in a court-martial.
Whitfield left two rangers in camp. One had reported in sick, and the other was the aging Oscar Pickett, exhausted by the long patrol in which he had just participated. Rusty had to leave Alamo behind, for the horse was too tired to undertake another trip. He picked it done, confiscated from a thief caught running stolen horses down from Indian territory. The Rangers had chosen to keep most of the mounts because they lacked the manpower to go looking for their rightful owners. That had been Captain Whitfield's stated justification, at least. The day was more than half gone. Rusty thought they'd need the devil's own luck to find the Indians before dark. He did not feel that lucky. Captain Whitfield sent him out in front to scout, though any ranger could have led the way as well. Where they might connect with the Indians was anyone's guess. Billings came forward and rode beside him a while. Rusty suspected the lieutenant was watching him to be sure he didn't seize an opportunity to slip away and avoid Confederate service. The officer seemed to have banked the coals of his anger, though he would probably fan them back to life when the mission was over.
This ain't the healthiest place for you to be.
As long as I am here, I want to get the first shot at the Indians.
Like as not, they'll fire the first shot. And if they hit anybody, it'll be whoever is up front.
Billings contemplated that possibility and dropped back to rejoin the others. Sergeant Forrest caught up to Rusty a while later. He rode with his peg leg secured by a leather loop tied above the stirrup.
What did you say that threw a booger into the lieutenant?
I just told him the man out in front is usually the first one shot.
I wouldn't mind if he did get shot. Just a little bit, not enough to kill him. He'd be a better educated man.
Somebody like him has got no business carrying authority over anybody. How come he's never gone back east to fight the Yankees since he seems to hate them so bad?
Well, same family connections that got him his commission. He claims he's more valuable here, hunting down conscription dodgers. I have to admit that he's a human ferret.
Every man to the job he's best at. Can he really get you court-martialed?
Well, I've got connections of my own, and he knows it. But you'd best watch him. He's got a special grudge against you. You might not make it all the way to Austin.
Not if I get a chance to slip away.
I'll help you if I can. But first, we've got this job to see after.
As Rusty had expected, darkness descended without their seeing any trace of their quarry. They made camp without fresh meat. The captain had forbidden any shooting that might alert the Indians. In the early morning sun, soon after breaking camp, Rusty saw the Indians 300 yards ahead, strung out in single and double file.
Whoa! Hold up, people. They've seen us. They're pulling into a line.
18. They outnumber us damn near 2-1. Any suggestions, Sergeant?
My old commander always said, when in doubt, charge.
Rusty could not see a good defensive position for either side. Rangers and Indians were all in the open.
Did your commander always win?
He did till they killed him.
Indians can count same as we can. Looks to me like our best chance is to hand them a surprise.
They've already seen us. How can we surprise them?
By doing what they don't expect. You ready to take your old commander's advice, Sergeant? Check your cinches, men. You wouldn't want your saddle to turn.
The men dismounted and drew their girths up tight. Rusty glanced toward Billings. The lieutenant appeared to have taken ill. Forrest noticed it, too.
Billings, just pretend they're Yankees.
What? Yes, of course.
Whitfield removed his hat and bowed his head.
Lord, we're fixing to get ourselves into a right smart of a fight. We hope you're on our side in this, but if you can't be, please don't be helping them Injuns. Amen. Everybody ready?
Wind roared in Rusty's ears as they rushed toward the Comanche line. The Indians soon began to waver as the Rangers neared. Rusty sensed the Indians' confusion. Captain Whitfield had called it right. They had not expected a determined charge by an outnumbered enemy. The Rangers were 50 yards away when the Indian line split apart. A few warriors fired rifles and launched arrows wildly, then followed the others in disorganized retreat. The Ranger line swept through the opening.
We can whip them! Give them another run, boys!
This time, there was no Indian line. Warriors were scattered, addled by the audacity of the inferior force. Three lay on the ground. A fourth was afoot, chasing his runaway horse.
Keep them broke up! Don't let them get back together!
The Rangers themselves broke up, pursuing small groups of Indians in various directions. From the first, Rusty had concentrated on one warrior he surmised might be the party leader.
Whoa!
Through the smoke, he saw the Indian jerk and tumble from his horse.
I'll finish him!
The Indian was not ready to be finished. He rose up on shaky legs and aimed his rifle. Billings lay pinned, a leg caught beneath his shot horse. Pressing one bloody hand against a wound in his side, the Indian limped toward him. He held a knife.
Help!
Damn fool.
Rusty charged his horse toward Billings. The Comanche saw him coming and moved faster.
For God's sake, somebody!
Rusty knew a running shot was chancy, but if not stopped, the warrior would reach the lieutenant ahead of him. He brought the stock to his shoulder and braced the heavy rifle with his left hand. The Indian fell and started crawling. Billings struggled, still did not free himself. Rusty didn't have any time left. He gripped the rifle like a club and charged.
Oh, are you sure he's dead?
I'm dead enough. Instead of going after one of your own, you came running to try and finish mine when he was already down. I ought to have let him gut you.
A quick look around assured him that no other danger was imminent. The war party had broken up. Warriors were fleeing in several directions, most pursued by Rangers.
Hey, hey! You just gonna stand there and get this horse off of me?
You brought this on yourself. I wanted to keep that warrior alive.
What for? There's still plenty of Indians. I'm ordering you, Shannon. Get me out of this fix.
Order away, damn you. I'm not in the army yet.
Oh, come on. Put some muscle into it. You want those savages to come back and catch me helpless?
Honest? That'd suit me, except they'd catch me too. I turned my horse loose to save your ungrateful neck.
True, he had let go of the reins, but the dun horse had stopped 100 feet away. The excitement over, the animal was beginning to graze. Rusty saw no reason to point out that he'd be easy to catch.
Well, hello there, Lieutenant. You seem to have got yourself in quite a pickle.
Oh, Forrest, it's about time you got here. I can't get this red-headed Pecklewood to be any help.
Yep. I saw enough to know that this red-headed Pecklewood saved your life, and with some risk to his own.
There's still a little life in that horse, Sergeant. You'd best watch out for his hooves if he commences to kick.
Better be sure that leg's not broke.
Oh, it's a little bruised, but it'll be fine. Shannon, you ought to have shot that Indian good and proper the first time. He wouldn't have killed my horse. So now what? I've been set afoot.
There's several Indian ponies running loose. I'll try to catch one for you.
Then don't just stand there talking.
Billings limped to where the Indian lay. He picked up a painted bullhide shield. With the Comanche's own knife, he cut a leather thong from around the warrior's neck and removed a small leather pouch. Rusty knew it would be the Indian's medicine bag, containing sanctified articles supposed to protect him from harm. They had brought him no luck today. Billings cut 2 eagle feathers from the warrior's braided hair.
Too bad he wasn't wearing a headdress. That would look good hanging on the wall.
I'll see about catching you a horse.
I'll go with you.
What? Don't go off and leave me here alone.
If any Indians show up, just lay down and play dead. I almost wished I'd left him and that Comanche to sort things out for themselves.
Don't expect gratitude. If anything, he'll resent you more than he already does.
After I pulled his bacon out of the coals?
Well, he's a proud man, though God knows he has little to be proud about. To him, you're an inferior, and you've made him beholden to you. That'll itch at him like a case of the mange.
Slowly, the Rangers gathered, Billings with a horse from the Comanches. Captain Whitfield was the only casualty. He had taken an arrow in the hip. The wound did not appear deep enough to cripple him permanently, but his ride back to Fort Belknap would be grueling punishment. Blood poisoning was always a possibility.
Looks like we've killed their leader, and we set half of them afoot. Ain't much they can do but give up the game and go back where they come from.
Typically, when Comanches split, they regrouped at some previously agreed-upon gathering point. Rusty could see three Indians half a mile away, moving north. Two were on horseback, a third walking.
Let's back off a ways and give some of them a chance to come get this one. Then we'll follow them so close they can't do anything except return to the river.
We? You'll do well just to get back to camp with that hole in your hip.
I'll take one man with me in case I fall off my horse and I can't get back on by myself. I'm leaving you in charge, Rusty. You and the sergeant.
Hey! We've already lost a lot of time. This wasn't our responsibility in the first place, chasing somebody else's Indians.
Fine. Then you can go with me back to camp. The rest will come along when they finish the job.
I intend to file a protest when we return to Austin. You people will have hell to pay.
File and be damned. Take over, Rusty.
I'll go with the Rangers, Lieutenant.
You just make certain you still have all of them when you get back to Belknap.
Shannon?
Yes, Sergeant?
You're holding the cards.
We'll do what the captain said. Back off and give him room. If that's all right with you.
It's all right with me if we don't see Austin for next Christmas.
They waited afoot, giving their horses a chance to rest. After a time, several warriors who had not lost their mounts returned to retrieve the man who had fallen. They lifted him and placed him belly down on a black pony. Shortly, they caught up to several who were afoot, some of them wounded. The Rangers followed at a couple of hundred yards, close enough to be an irritant, but not enough to present an immediate threat.
To them, we must be like mosquitoes, buzzing around your face, but don't bite.
We want them to know we could bite if they give us a reason, man.
It did not appear that the Indians were going to give them reason. They trudged northward at a pace slow enough to accommodate those who had to walk. The sergeant pulled in beside Rusty.
You were unhappy about having to kill that Indian.
I've killed Indians when I had to. This time, I oughtn't to have had to. If we'd made him a prisoner, I figured the others would give up the raid.
They gave it up anyway. It's my feeling that you had more reason than that.
If things had taken a different turn a long time ago, I might have been riding with them myself.
With the Indians? But you're white.
You've heard of the big Comanche raid on the Gulf Coast back in 1840? I was there. Just a little tyke. Not much more than walking good. Best anybody could figure, the Indians killed my folks and carried me off. Intended to raise me for a warrior, I guess. Later on, when volunteers hit the Indians at Plum Creek, Hawk Shannon and a preacher named Webb found me on the battleground. Mike and Dora Shannon gave me a home.
You remember anything about your real folks?
Just a foggy picture is all. Never could even remember their names. And nobody ever found out who they were.
Tough being left an orphan at that age.
The worst of it is not knowing who I am. By raising, I'm a Shannon. By blood? Well, I have no idea. I see strangers and wonder if they might be kin. I might have kin folks living right down the road from me and I wouldn't even know it. Sometimes I wonder if I'm kin to anybody. It's like there's a piece of me missing and I'll never find it.
Everybody needs family. Without family, a man is like a leaf loose on the wind.
My real folks couldn't have done better by me than the Shannons did. They treated me like I was their own. But if it hadn't been for the fight at Plum Creek, chances are I'd have been raised Comanche. Or I'd be dead.
So you feel a kinship to the Indians?
Don't know as I'd call it kinship exactly. After all, they must have killed my real folks. And they've killed lots of other good people. But I could have become a Comanche myself if it hadn't been for luck.
Maybe it wasn't luck. Maybe the Almighty had other plans for you.
I don't think he planned for me to go back east and shoot at Union soldiers.
I've suspected all along that you're not much in sympathy with the Confederates.
When Daddy Mike came home from the Mexican War, he hung an American flag on the wall where we'd look at it every day. He never wanted to forget what him and others like him went through to get Texas into the Union. Even after Texas seceded, he never backed away from that.
So now the Shannons are gone and you've got nobody.
There's a young woman down on the Colorado River. If this war ever gets over with...
Good for you. When a man spends his life alone, it seems like he shrivels up inside. We all need somebody.
Nobody knows that better than me.
At last, the visible remnants of the Comanche raiding party reached the Red River. Rusty was reasonably sure the rest would come along soon, or perhaps had already crossed at some other point. Once the Indians reached the far side, the Rangers rode up to the river to water their horses. Rusty was careful where he let his mount step. The Red was notorious for quicksand. The riverbed was wide, but the river itself looked deceptively narrow. Much of the water seeped along just beneath the wet sands, out of sight.
You know, don't you, that the other side is Union territory?
It's also Indian territory.
But the Indians we trailed have gone on. If someone from this party were to cross, there's nothing I could legally do to make them come back.
I've got no business on the other side. No Texan has.
His mind ran back to the sorrowful time when he'd been among a party of volunteer rangers escorting friendly Indians across the Red River against their will, throwing them off a Texas reservation they'd been promised would be theirs forever. He had felt ashamed, though he understood the settler anxiety that had led to Indian removal. The intervening years had not lessened his feeling of guilt. To go across the river now would reopen old internal wounds, even if the Indians did not inflict new external ones upon him.
If we happen to look the other way, you could slip free and go wherever you want to.
Where I'd most like to go would be my farm down on the Colorado River.
Other conscription officers might find you.
There's a lot of timber down there. I'd make them hunt awful hard.
Then I'd suggest you hang back when we start east. I'll make it a point not to be watching you.
You'll be in trouble with Lieutenant Billings.
Might more won't make any difference. The day the war is over, I'll be leaving the army anyway. Doesn't have much place for a one-legged soldier.
Rusty offered the sergeant his hand.
Maybe in better times, we'll see one another again.
That'd please me. Anybody share Shannon's leanings? If you can stand my company, I'll string along with you, Rusty.
Thought you decided to go to the army, Len.
I'm afraid I'd have to kill that Billings before he ever got to Austin. At least notch his ears and teach him the Ranger Code of Conduct. I expect there's some silly law against that.
I'd be tickled to have you.
No one else offered to stay behind. With luck, Rusty thought, the war might be over before any of these men reached the battlefields back east. Aside from his farm, far away, almost every possession he had was on his back or tied to his saddle. But he'd been obliged to leave his black horse behind. To try to retrieve Alamo now was too risky. Returning to camp a second time would ask more from good luck than one man was entitled to.
Please ask Captain Whitfield to watch out for my horse. If the outfit breaks up, he can take Alamo home with him. I'll find him when this foolishness is over with.
I'll tell him. All right, men. No Indians here. We're moving out.
I'm only sorry that we'll miss seeing the big explosion.
Well, what explosion?
The lieutenant, when he finds that we slipped out of his hands, he's liable to swell up like a toad and bust wide open.
I'll be sure and tell you all about it when I see you again.
Rusty watched the departing riders, then cast a glance back over his shoulder toward the river. He felt uncomfortably exposed out here in the open. The prickly feeling ran along his spine.
I've got a notion somebody's watching us. We'd best be traveling, too.
You lead and I'll follow.
Len Tanner was unusually quiet. Most of the time, the lanky ranger had much more to say than Rusty thought necessary. He would ramble aimlessly, sometimes stopping in the middle of a sentence and jump into a totally unrelated subject. That he was quiet now indicated he felt as conflicted as Rusty about their sudden leave-taking.
Wondering if you did the right thing coming with me?
I'm always wondering if I've done the right thing. I've been known once or twice to make a mistake.
Well, I can't imagine when that was.
What'll we do when we get to that farm of yours?
We'll plow and plant and keep our eyes peeled for conscript officers.
You still got the Monahan family living on your place?
Been a long time since I heard from them. But they're still there as far as I know. Mother Clemmie and Geneva and the two younger girls. And Clemmie's old daddy, Vince Purdy.
That Geneva is a pretty little slip of a girl. If you hadn't already put a claim on her, I'd do it myself. How long since you heard from her?
I got a letter a year or so ago. There was probably more that never reached me. No telling what went with our mail.
At least you'll be seeing her pretty soon.
If she's still on the farm where I left her and her folks.
Wish I had a girl waiting for me. I never knew how to act around women, or what to say.
But it's hard to picture you not having something to say.
Always seemed like when I opened my mouth, the wrong words came out. By the time I knew what I ought to have said, the girl would be gone.
I was awkward around Geneva till we got used to one another. After that, things just seemed to come natural.
Did you and her ever...
She ain't that kind.
I was only wondering if you ever talked about marrying is all.
Well, it was understood, sort of. I never felt like I ought to ask her as long as the war was on.
Maybe you should have. Things can change when you're gone for a long time.
Rusty fell silent, trying not to think about how much could have happened in the time he'd been gone. He tried to hear the music of her voice and see her as he had first seen her long ago.
I thought we was all by ourselves.
Rusty jerked to attention. His skin prickled as five horsemen pushed out of a thicket. One cradled a rifle across his left arm.
At least they ain't Comanches.
Just the same, they don't look like they've come to bid us welcome.
Dismounting, Rusty slipped his rifle from its scabbard. He stood behind his horse to shield himself. Holding the weapon ready across his saddle, he watched the oncoming riders. Tanner followed his example.
Brushmen?
I don't know who else would be so far out this way.
Rusty didn't like the riders' somber expressions. The black-bearded man carrying the rifle pushed a little past the others. He gave first Tanner and then Rusty a hasty appraisal that brought no friendliness into his sharp black eyes. He leaned forward, focusing a fierce suspicion on Rusty.
Who are you men? What's your business?
Name's Shannon. Rusty Shannon. This here's Len Tanner. We're headed for my farm.
Ain't no farms out this way.
Mine is down on the Colorado River.
You're a long ways from home. How come you so far west?
The other riders were unshaven, which added to their formidable appearance. None had a beard as black as the leader's, however. Rusty sized them up as probable army deserters, conscription dodgers, or simply fugitives from the law for various and sundry crimes.
We didn't come to cause trouble. We had no idea there was anybody around.
They got honest faces, Oldham. They don't look like conscript officers.
Now, Barlow, you know you can't tell what a conscript officer looks like. They don't wear a uniform, most of them. Maybe you're rangers.
Another rider pulled a paint horse up beside the leader and gave Rusty and Tanner an accusing study. His eyes reminded Rusty of a wolf's. He was a youth of 18 or 19. His uneven whiskers patchy, soft, and light in color.
They are rangers, big brother. I seen both of them over at Fort Belknap.
We was rangers. They was trying to drag us into the army, so we took French leave. Like most of you, I'd judge.
That don't hold no water with me, Clyde.
Me neither, little brother.
It could be the truth. Lately, the army's been grabbing everybody that ain't missing an arm or a leg, right down to boys and old men.
Then again, these could be spies sent to find us and bring the army.
Only safe thing is to shoot them.
What if they ain't spies?
Then we made a mistake. Too bad, but I never heard nobody claim that war is fair. Half the time, it's the wrong people that get killed.
Rusty saw agreement in the other men's faces, all but Barlow's. He leaned his rifle across the saddle and drew a bead on Oldham's broad chest. He tried to keep his voice calm.
We're liable to take more killing than you'll want to do.
Whoa now, let's don't nobody do nothing hasty. If you two say you ain't rangers no more, I say we ought to take your word. For now. How about you two coming along with us?
We've got plans of our own.
The Oldhams and two others cautiously moved up a little, trying to form a semicircle that would prevent escape. Rusty pivoted the rifle barrel from Clyde Oldham to his younger brother.
Y'all stop where you're at.
There ain't but five. Two for me and two for you. We can share the other one.
It'd be a poor consolation to die knowing we won.
We don't want to kill anybody.
Well, we don't either. We came here to stay out of the war. Ain't no point in starting one of our own.
Hey, ain't but two of them. Y'all afraid?
You better be, little brother. You got that rifle aimed right at your belly.
Yeah? Well, I ain't afraid.
Oh, hell.
Ooh, buddy!
The young Oldham was down, his arm in tatters. The paint was lying on the ground, a small hole in its neck. The boy had shot his own horse.
Don't anybody make a move. I still got a load in this gun.
Brother! You gonna be all right, little brother?
My
arm! Stay still. Let me check it out. Well, this is gonna hurt a bit. Oh, damn!
Hey, you all throw them guns to one side before you get off your horses.
Do it, men!
We're still deep in the woods. You better reload that rifle or draw your pistol.
Damn, but that's a lot of blood. I hope I didn't kill that kid.
If you didn't, you taught him a hell of a lesson.
Tanner moved slowly from behind his horse, keeping his rifle trained in the direction of the brushmen.
No sudden movements. Your weapon's down.
They're down. Damn it, I ain't gonna fight you. My brother's bleeding.
Tanner leaned over the fallen youth, then looked up at Rusty.
You hit him in the arm. It's a hell of a mess.
Damn. Hold up, I can make a tourniquet. Tanner, hold my rifle. Hey, buddy, I'm gonna wrap this around your arm. It'll keep the bleeding under control. There. That should help it. I don't suppose anybody in your camp claims to be a doctor.
There's a preacher comes to see us now and again, but he ain't there right now.
A preacher? Would his name be Webb?
Yeah, that's him. You know him?
From as far back as I can remember.
The more he looked at young Oldham's smashed arm, the more he despaired of saving it. At this point, he wouldn't wager two bits that the youth would even survive.
Ain't much more we can do for him out here. Y'all better get him back to your camp.
You think we'll just let the two of you ride away?
That's all we wanted in the first place. The rest of this was your own doing.
Tanner stepped between the men and the weapons they had tossed away.
You can come back later to fetch these.
Rusty heard horses and looked up. Six or eight riders came loping out of the thicket toward them. His heart sagged, and for a moment he felt defeated. Then he recognized the man riding in the lead. Hope began a tentative revival.
James Monahan is with those riders.
Well, last time you and him met, you didn't part real friendly.
He's the best hope we've got. We can't fight our way past all that bunch.
We heard shooting. What the hell happened here?
It was Buddy Oldham's fault he tried to shoot this ranger.
Damn it, Rusty Shannon. Can you go anywhere without taking trouble with you? Oh, and in the arm, too. If you had to shoot him, couldn't you just crease him a little?
I didn't want to shoot him at all. He gave me no choice.
Clyde, you're his big brother. Looks like he could have kept him jugged and stoppered.
Yeah, he's always had a mind of his own.
Damn pity he never used it much. All right, let's get him to camp and see what more we can do. Mac, we'll put him on your horse. You can ride behind the saddle and hold him on. Rusty, did you have to shoot Buddy's horse, too?
He did it himself.
Well, that don't come as any big surprise.
Riding, Rusty studied Geneva's brother. James had been forced to leave home early in the war and live by his wits in a wild area where the only people he encountered were Indians and fugitives like himself. The strain had put a haunted, desperate look in his eyes. Rusty knew him to be near his own age, mid to late 20s, but James had the appearance of a man closer to his 40s. Rusty wanted to ask him a dozen questions, most having to do with Geneva, but this did not seem the time. James broke the silence.
You still a ranger?
Not since yesterday. A couple officers came by looking for soldiers. Wasn't really too warm on the idea.
It took a long time about doing the smart thing.
It wasn't smart. We just didn't see where we had any choice. We were trying to explain that when Buddy Boy decided to commence firing.
He couldn't have hit you. Never could shoot worth a damn.
I wish I'd known that.
I brought him out here to protect him, to keep the war from taking him, and now this!
Rusty had no answers left. 1,000 of them would not change what had happened.